team, so I'm sure he can feel it on behalf of both of them. So just a quick bio for Stephen. Stephen is a consulting actuary with a passion for pension across Africa, and for some weird reason, Old Mutual has employed him for almost 10 years, and for some weirder reason, he chairs the ASSA Retirement Matters Committee. Plus, he is heavily involved with ASSA Social Security and Retirement Reform Interest Group. Plus, he is on Exco of the Society of Actuaries of Namibia. But that's a different story. We'll call him back to tell us a couple of stories from that side.
It's going to come up.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, everybody. I would have happily listened to Andrea the whole day. Where's Andrea sitting now? Did she run away? Oh, there you are, hiding right at the back. Okay, no, that was awesome. Thanks very much. And with the speed that you were speaking, you were fitting a lot into the relatively short period of time, so we appreciate that. For those of us who haven't been able to dial into all the ICA 2023 talks, also even though we had registered for it and paid a lot of Old Mutual's money to register for it, you just don't have time to watch all this good stuff and go through all the gory details. So the plan for today then was to end with an update for everybody in terms of where we are with retirement reform, Social Security and retirement reform. So my idea was to have Joanna, who's the deputy chair at the moment, I'm sure most people know, of the Retirement Matters Committee, and I said to Joanna, since I presented, I chaired last year, I would leave most of the talking to her. And then she took ill yesterday and let me know yesterday, and that's why I was drawing up slides this morning thinking, okay, what am I going to talk about? So I'm planning to keep this as short as sweet as possible. I don't think anyone's going to have any major objections to that. So just to note, what we have is so we have the Retirement Matters Committee, and we also have a separate interest group, as we call it, which is responsible for retirement reform and Social Security reform. And so we provide input. So whenever National Treasury and the like release these documents for commentary, then it's we as that interest group that provides the input officially on behalf of the Actuarial Society. And usually what we do is we put out requests also to the RMC members in terms of what would they like us to include. So for everyone here, the message today is please do make sure that you're aware of who your RMC rep is and make sure that you give as much input to them as possible. But I'm going to speak about that. So not too long ago, I think it was the beginning of last year, we had a sessional meeting where Natasha was speaking a lot about the two-pot system that was going to be coming in, and Andrea did this slide in a lot more detail, speaking about the amount of change that we've seen over the last 10 years or so, since the Minister of Finance's speech in 2012, where the idea was that there was a lot of reform needed in the pensions space, in the pensions model in South Africa, because of unsuitable outcomes for members of retirement funds. And that's why we've seen these sorts of massive changes that we've experienced over the last 10 years or so. And that's also why we expect significant further reforms into the future, which I'm sure you know about. I'm not going to be sharing anything that's massively earth-shattering today. A lot of this is going to be something that you are aware of. So just, I was on leave. I submitted it while on leave in Namibia because I am crazy. We sent this through on the 14th of July. Our input for the latest version, which pertains to tax legislative changes coming now out of two pots and the two pots thinking. So one of the things that was mentioned earlier was this idea of seeding capital. And there was input that we received, I must say, from a couple of actuaries saying, but organized labor is in favor of increasing the seeding capital access. So from 10% subject to a maximum of 25,000 Rand up to one-third subject to a maximum of 50,000 Rand. So there were a couple of actuaries that mentioned this, and we said no. So the way we work is it's the majority. Whoever's in that group, and we go along with that majority. So sometimes my views hold, sometimes my views don't hold. This was one where I spoke against it. I said, no ways. We're not going to be encouraging the seeding capital access at all. So in response to Nick's query earlier, when we were speaking to National Treasury, and Natasha must back me up, we did say that the reason we are in support of the two-pot system is because compulsory pension preservation is the dream that we've been trying to achieve for many years. And that's the only reason that we would support access, because of the fact that this is the only way that organized labor is going to accept it. So it's not that we were keen to encourage access. I've had a couple of actuaries approach me to say, this is a terrible idea, Stephen, encouraging people to take or allowing people to take out retirement savings without even having them change jobs is just a terrible idea. But it's the quid pro quo It's that. It's the cost. You know, everything comes at a cost, and that's what we've done to say that we support the system because of that goal of achieving two-thirds compulsory preservation, and also using the argument that one-third of money will be taken out at retirement and splurged anyway. So that's a given. That's going to be like going down the drain very quickly anyway, which is why we as ASSA supported this. On the implementation date, so a number of the industry bodies have given this input in terms of we're not going to be ready by the 1st of March next year. Me as an individual, I was against this. I said, no, we should push for implementation. The majority shouted me down. And so we also provided this input that we think that at least something should be done there in terms of extending the amount of time that people have to make the changes because of the communication, because of the admin changes, because of the rule changes, et cetera, et cetera, especially for the DB funds. And where we have a particular area of concern that we've raised with Treasury now at least four times, twice in writing, twice in meetings, is about the fact that the GPF and other similar municipal and public sector funds do not fit nicely into this one-third, two-third split. So the way the wording is currently being put forward would require that the Act for the GPF would need to be rewritten, and also would mean that there would be greater access for people now in the GPF, which doesn't seem to be the intention of the legislation. So we've said this repeatedly. The problem is that you're dealing with a very bureaucratic system, it seems. So they're writing huge amounts of documentation, which goes through review and review and review and review. So when we come in and we say, guys, no, you have to change this, it's almost like, okay, well, we don't have time. Maybe we'll do it in the next round. And then maybe we'll do it in the next round. So we're pushing back, but we're getting concerned that the closer and closer we get to the time of implementation, and this still hasn't been resolved, that this is potentially a problem. Right, in terms of hybrid funds, DB/DC funds, we've also raised the point that we've made before to say that there should be this third option in terms of more flexibility. So what we had envisioned previously with our feedback, which didn't happen, which we've now again put into the recommendations, is to say that there should be a third option. It's not DB, it's not DC. Have some sort of approach that the fund and its valuator can go to the FSCA with to say, this is what we propose doing, and this is why we think it's right, and give that option of getting an approval. So DB, fine, we understand what needs to happen. DC, fine, we understand what needs to happen. But there's a third option which is subject to FSCA approval if the Board of Trustees want to go through that. So we've requested that again. When we spoke to Treasury, they said, put it in and we'll think about it. So we put it in again to let them think about it. And then some of the other comments were smaller in nature in terms of allowing estimates when it comes to the DB calcs, because obviously those can be onerous. I mean, we're talking about generally small groups of people in the private sector funds and now having to do a lot of onerous calculations. On the old mutual side, for example, under administration, we've maybe got 500 people there with DB benefits, and now we're putting through massive system changes to look after the 420,000+ people we're administering. Do we really have to put things through for these 500 people also? In terms of the exemptions, that's a straightforward point. The taxation, there's been a lot of talk about that. We've also raised concern there. We're obviously concerned about what seems inevitable, that there's going to be a run on the bank. So just recently, the National Pension Fund in Zambia, they've introduced also this post-COVID allowance to give people the right to access some of their money early. And there's been a massive, massive run. As you would expect, anybody and everybody who could claim, they claimed. Chile, there was also similar research that came out where they have these compulsory pension pots that they gave access to, and anybody who could, if you could claim $5, you claim $5. If you could claim $10, you claim $10. There's been a massive run on the bank. So we're trying to also look for ways, any ways, that we can just try and preempt this, to stop this, to slow this down, because a lot of people have been saying that in March next year they're going on leave for a month or six because it's going to be chaos at this point, is what we're expecting. So how do we slow that down? Even if we're renaming the pots just to say emergency only, please do not just willy-nilly go and take your money, even though we know the majority of people will be expected to do that. So further, we requested some clarity also in terms of the Provident Fund members that were aged 55 or older on the 1st of March 2021. So what exactly is the default? The default seems to be, I think, that they would stay in the current system. We just wanted that to be clarified. Treatment of the death benefits, to also say that there will be no compulsory annuitization, even for the retirement pot portion. And then also more control to say how exactly the savings pot, the accessible pot, would be implemented in order to once again avoid this massive drain that we're all expecting. And there's just an idea also that we as the DB evaluators at some point, once there's greater clarity that's been received, would be able to get together for us to decide and agree what should we be doing going forward. I'm seeing a lot of frowning faces. Want to hit me? Anybody want to talk here? I'm going to refer all the difficult questions to Natasha. Anybody got any comments or questions now? Are we talking two parts? You want to keep it to the end? Subedra.
I can see you are desperate for someone to ask a question, Stephen.
Thank you for saving me.
No, but I think if we link this to what was said in some of the previous sessions, I think the member buy-in is key to this, you know. It's member buy-in and member understanding of why this is being made available as well. As you said, you know, the biggest risk, you don't want people to just take all their money out all the time whenever it's available, you know. That's the last thing that you want. But to me, there is a problem that's coming that's really going to affect the member buy-in and member happiness with that, is that members are expecting that from the 1st of March next year, they're going to be able to get a lot of money out. Well, not a lot, but some money out. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be very difficult practically to implement that. So I think we're being set up for failure from the beginning, and I think that's going to harm it going forward, because if members then are promised you're going to get your money from next year and you don't get it, when you can get your money, they're going to take out as much as possible. So I think that's going to be, you're sort of getting off on the wrong foot. And part of the reason why, I mean, we've seen, you put up that first slide, all the steps of legislation. All of us know how long it took on funds to get rule amendments done to implement that legislation. This is now for every single fund. It's definitely not going to be done by 1st of March next year. Mm. So to me, that's the biggest problem. Members are expecting it. They're being promised it. It's not going to happen. They're going to get off on the wrong foot. It's going to ruin the trust in the whole system.
Yeah, I agree completely. So, I mean, what we've been preaching to our clients, our trustees, to our management companies is about the education, communication, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think we're heading for a strange situation next year. And I also agree with the point that people are going to be expecting, ooh, there's a lot of money coming my way, and they're not going to be getting a lot of money. And then that's going to erode confidence in the system. I agree with that concern, yeah, which is all the more reason for why we need to increase and improve communication and education around this. Arthur.
Thanks, Steve. I'm chairman of a board of trustees, and one of our concerns is how much liquidity to hold for next March. Mm. So that's a real investment problem, because if you put too much in cash and the markets run, you lose. If you don't have enough in cash and the markets drop. So that is a real problem. And I didn't realize that the expectation is that there's going to be a run on the bank. Mm. My understanding was, well, it'll sort of phase in if people use money as they need it. But if it's a run on the bank, we got a problem.
Yeah. Big picture, the modeling that we did, Natasha, is that long term, we don't think it's going to have a massive impact. But short term, beginning of next year, I think it is going to be a significant blip that we're going to see in the experience. Because we've already got people asking, where's my money? When am I going to get my money? There's an expectation also that the understanding seems to be one-third, that I'm going to get one-third tax-free, here I go, and then we all live happily ever after. Natasha.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to Zabedra's point as well, you know, you're going to put your card into the ATM machine and expect 2,000 Rand, and 1,400 is going to come out because 360 is going to go in tax and 240 is going to go in admin fees. And that's going to, you know, put a real spit on things, yeah. Mm.
But I mean, even with the 25,000, so people are going to be paying fees and tax on the 25,000, and meanwhile, they haven't even got 250,000 that they can get to 25,000 to begin with, because most people have very low levels of retirement savings. They just don't realize it. So there's going to be a lot of disappointed people next year, and then unfortunately, like Subedra's making a valid point, it's just going to trigger worse behavior after that, because then it's like, I don't trust the system at all. Andrea.
Sorry, yes, I agree with that point. And I was actually asked at a fairly large fund to do a presentation later in the week, and the principal officer asked me to explain to the members that it's your money. If you don't have money, you're not getting anything. There's this concept among the members that it's free money being given out, and you're going to get 25,000. So I think that's an important point, and funds need to understand. I mean, if members have less than 20,000, there's nothing come 1 March because it's a minimum 2,000 withdrawal capped at 10%. So many members have less than 20,000 fund credit, and then there will be nothing. Mm. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Thank you, Stephen. Just in terms of the setup, I think I've sent Andrea a WhatsApp. I'm not sure if she's got the Forbes numbers close, but I think the larger insurers have done the liquidity analysis and all that in retirement funds, and I know the top three or three of the largest insurers are sitting, it's about 3% of the current, or seeding will amount to about 3% of total assets, which I think can be absorbed in terms of liquidity. The issue on the seeding, 10% up to 25,000. The problem's not the 25,000. The problem's the 10%, because the 10% is in most cases close to an average of 10,000 rand, which means the average member's got 100,000 in the fund. Thanks.
Yeah, which people don't understand. So I think, Arthur, the comment from Anton is then that maybe the liquidity drawdown won't be as bad as we're thinking, which is what Natasha was also doing in terms of her modelling for us. So it's 3% then, Anton, on top of the normal liquidity problems. It still seems digestible. But it's just what people are doing to themselves. They're shooting themselves in the foot still. Tommy.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. Another thing that we haven't talked about is how do we communicate it to members? I think we spoke this morning about communication and a lot, and how to show this in benefit statements can be a danger, because it shows you money that you can see as cash as you can get. But it can also be an opportunity, I think, for us to educate members. You know, so there's an opportunity now to rethink how do we present. You know, and we may have to show the one pot, but that could also be an opportunity to sort of raise the profile of the benefit statement and have the good messages there of, you know, you can improve your outcome by adding and things like that. So I think it's although we may need to show some information that can lead to disinvestments, it can also be an opportunity to educate, I think.
So, Tommy, you're going to be doing a presentation to us in the near future about the projections, et cetera, et cetera, because I think we can take it into account there. If you take a withdrawal, this is what's going to happen. You would have been there, and now you're going to be here. So this is a bad, bad idea, and we show you in numbers why it's a bad idea. We suggest you don't do this because you're shooting yourself in the foot. So I think it ties into that, yes. Sorry, Andre.
One other point is the reputation of the industry. I think your 240 rand is probably far too low, and maybe we should all move our admin to NMG so they can just do. I mean, I've seen no numbers, but my personal guess is you're talking 500 to 800 rand. So imagine the members going to get their 2,000 rand minimum, and once they've paid tax and paid the fees, there's nothing left. So a major issue for the reputation of the industry.
Yeah, that's going to be seen as, no, it was just us as the industry pushing for this as a get-rich-quick scheme sort of thing, yeah.
Hi, Steve. Sakib here.
Yes, sir.
One of the concerns with the implementation date, I think, is around the practicalities of actually getting this done from an administrator and an investment perspective. And the more you dig into it, practically implementing, the amount of choice starts to become, you know, more and more evident. So, for example, on the investment side, how do you cater for the fact that a savings component needs to have a liquidity aspect to it, whereas the long term? So is it a set investment policy for both? Is it kind of more liquid on the one end? What about long term impacts if members are now not touching that money, being in money market, for example? So a lot of concerns around, you know, how much flexibility to give right up front, and how much development work that takes, and having that ready to go by 1 March 2024. So my question is, you know, have you been seeing this type of questions both in your capacity in the RMC and perhaps even in Old Mutual? Are there concerns? Are you getting pushback from, say, the admin or the IT teams?
There's a lot of concerns, I can tell you that. But on both aspects, as RMC and as an Old Mutual employee, what I'm seeing within the company. So that's why there's a big desire for that date to be pushed out by a year. But being that next year is an election year, I'm not expecting it to happen, because this is a very popular decision that's going to be implemented just because of the fact that it helps with the elections. But yes, there are massive concerns. Andrea, I was worried about having too much time, and now look at and now I feel like I don't have enough time with all the comments and questions. Natasha again.
Mm.
So I think Andrew Davidson on the investment subcommittee, him and I did a presentation for the pension lawyers last year, and he looked into the investment things quite carefully. And the modelling he was doing was kind of, and we kind of, you know, so it's kind of 3% up front. Most funds are paying out about 10 to 15% anyway in normal withdrawal benefits. That one third of the new contributions, it kind of only grows to about 7 or 8, 9% in a year or two. So it's actually not, your liquidity doesn't actually change. And your investment strategy certainly immediately should not necessarily therefore change as well. And, you know, maybe we will have to change in the long term, but almost kind of take a wait and see approach potentially, and just to see where it goes, see the experience, how are people doing it before making big sweeping changes, I think is kind of the...
Yeah, because the message is again that the liquidity drawdown is not going to be as bad as we may fear, but it's because people are getting out less money than they anticipate, which is then going to cause other knock-on problems. Okay, anybody else got anything to say about two bots before we move on?
I've got a couple online.
Okay. Andrea, do you want to go first or do you want...
I'm going to read David Glickman's. It seems to me a bit dangerous to implement two pots at different dates for different funds. There are tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of members who transfer benefits every year. If the transfer fund is exempt but the transfer rule is not, then there will surely be a problem actioning such transfer. It effectively becomes three pots. Surely we must push for a single implementation date for all funds.
Yeah, good point. Good point. We'll see. I mean, we'll see how it works. Our biggest concern is about the public sector funds. Maybe we should give the public sector funds an exemption. The public sector fund membership would not be happy with that. So it's like it's a damned if you do and you're damned if you don't approach now at the moment. So yeah, whatever we're doing, there's going to be problems and challenges. I agree.
Jeremy Andrews is asking the question, are there plans by National Treasury to have a national communication campaign?
Not to my knowledge. I think they're looking to us for that. When we raise the point to them, but there must be some way to slow down this massive run on the bank that we're expecting, at least in terms of number of claims as opposed to total value of claims. Isn't there something that they can put into the legislation? They said, no, you should be able to figure that out. What? You're not giving us the power, the authority to do it. So no, a lot of this has been left up to us as industry.
Yeah, I guess we can learn a couple of lessons from Mexico what not to do.
Yeah.
Right, then I've got two comments here, one from Jan Geldenhuis, one from Anonymous, who says in their respective funds, they also see similar numbers, 3 to 5% as far as the liquidity story is going.
Okay.
So it seems to be a common thought. Mm-hmm. Then this one is a slightly different angle, which I think is necessary to hear. Francis, I think we need to see the savings pot in a positive light. It acts as a carrot that government is using to enable forced preservation prior to retirement. At least 2/3 will now be preserved, even when members change jobs. The end result is that we will see an improvement on member outcomes in the long term.
No, I agree completely, which is the reason why from the outset, Natasha will tell you, when we spoke to Treasury about this, we were always in favor of it. Because over the long term, I think in 20 years' time, when we look back, we're going to see this as a massive improvement, or a cause for massive improvement in retirement benefit outcomes. But it's the short term in terms of people's behavior and the sort of pushback and people getting upset and then making bad decisions afterwards. There's going to be some serious teething problems when we come to implementation. I think that's just the reality, that whenever it gets implemented, it's going to be a bit of a roller coaster. But long term, we still believe that this is going to be a force for good, yes. So we as ASSA have always supported it. There's been individual actuaries, like I say, we've been against it. But we as ASSA, overall, our approach has been to support this.
Sorry, okay, Stephen, just if I may, just on the comment, I think I just want to tie into the practicality regarding it. And I do think it's an important point that funds need to check with their administrator in terms of practically what can and can't be done come 1 March, because I appreciate that many are moving towards kind of changing their systems and being able to do all sorts of weird and wonderful things. The reality is that many won't be able to. So, for example, on the issue of the investment strategy, not all administrators can necessarily allow on a default basis to have administer a different strategy for one pot relative to another one, because it's, even though you can do MIC, it's a different thing applying bulk switches across life stages to different member records and pots. So if your administrator cannot administer come 1 March two different investment strategies, that by itself is an answer in terms of what you're going to do about your investment strategy, at least for now. And I do think the majority will work towards kind of full development to be able to cater for it, but the reality is that practically there are going to be some constraints, and it would be wise to stay within those constraints and not create expectations that cannot be met with kind of the workings in your fund.
Yeah. So everybody needs to take a chill pill and relax and not freak out is the message that we need to try and give to everybody in a polite way. But people are going to be panicking and people are going to be overreacting. We mustn't be surprised when this happens. So we need to start warning people, educating, communicating from 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago already. I think that's the message. Okay, can we move on from two pots? Because we can talk about two pots the whole day. So after two pots is bedded down, the next exciting aspect of reform that I'm looking forward to seeing is the idea of auto-enrollment. So auto-enrollment, I'll say this, I think, on my next slide, where what our government is describing as auto-enrollment, and this is very much a National Treasury perspective that they've brought out in the previous discussion papers, is that it amounts to compulsory retirement savings for the formal sector. So it's very similar in terms of overall philosophy as to the superannuation arrangements that Andrea was describing in Australia. So currently, contributory pension coverage is relatively low by our own standards in terms of the formal sector workers, 58%. If you look at other countries in Africa like Nigeria, like Ghana, that have got compulsory retirement savings for formal sector workers, they're only at 50%, even though it's compulsory. So for ours, it's officially a voluntary system because of the fact that it's up to the employer to decide whether the employee goes into a retirement fund or not, and yet it's at 58%, but we want to improve it. So we look at our UIF compliance, which in the private sector is estimated at 90%, and that's what we're trying to achieve. And that's why government has now come up with this idea of auto-enrollment to say post-two pots, it's going to become a requirement in terms of the formal sector workers having compulsory retirement savings. How, at what level, and how would that be phased in? That's still to be seen. The question would come up then also if the government's perspective, and again, this is National Treasury, is to have a DC fund as the automatic default option if you don't, as an employer, want to choose something from the private sector. But doesn't that clash with DSD's version of a DB, National Social Security Fund? Yes, but we're listening to two different, very different visions of where Social Security and retirement reform should be going. So it doesn't necessarily gel and talk to each other. So one of the things that also has been interesting when we had this discussion about auto-enrollment is that obviously government sees the private sector as being far too costly, that we're opaque with our fees too high, are far too high, and they believe that they can do a better job than us in the private sector when it comes to setting up and running a national fund, especially for employees in small companies, small employers, or otherwise the informal sector, atypical kind of workers. So the industry bodies came out strongly against this. We as ASSA, our perspective was go for it. If you think that you can do a better job and you're not forcing anyone to go into the government fund, then go for it and good luck, you know, let's see what happens. So we didn't have a problem with that. Getting the atypical informal sector workers into a fund like this is going to be a massive challenge. There is no perfect solution when you look across the continent. Mr. Prinsloo, you were telling me about Zambia, where they were trying to set up that National Provident Fund for informal sector workers. We've seen in Kenya where they've relaunched their product, their national fund for the informal sector workers. In Ghana, in Nigeria, you see this idea of micro pensions. They're trying different things, and even when it's incentivized, even when, like in Ghana, where the government in some cases is contributing 20% of the contribution paid in by an individual or worker, there's still low take-up just because informal sector workers don't really buy into this way of thinking. It's not set up for it. So there's always going to be a massive challenge here when it comes to the informal sector workers, which is another topic we can talk about the whole day long. And then what I'm expecting is to see a minimum contribution rate also coming through, because we've got employers, employees in the system at the moment who pay very low contributions. So in some of our umbrella funds, we're continuously having this debate about dropping the minimum required contribution, because then we can at least get employers to come in, get them starting to contribute for people, because at the moment they've got nothing. But at the same time, we want to maintain standards. And what's the point of having someone come in where the total contribution rate is 8% or less? So that debate I'm seeing continuously in a number of my umbrella fund clients, and I think this would also buy into that to say what is an actual acceptable lowest total contribution rate. So in Nigeria, it's 18%. In the UK, their auto-enrollment went up to 8% minimum. In Australia, they're busy phasing in 12%. So it's going to be interesting also to see what's the South African version if and when this comes about. Right, so then the idea of a national social security fund, We all remember August 2021 when the green paper was released and then it was withdrawn a month later. This idea is not dead, and so we should be seeing it again coming out. So at the moment what we're seeing is the debate about the basic income grant and NHI, but still National Social Security Fund, don't be surprised when this comes out again. And it is the norm across sub-Saharan Africa that you've got 35 countries with these national DB pension funds. Namibia is considering implementing it. In Eswatini, they're debating about converting their national provident fund into a national DB pension fund. In Malawi, for example, they've now for the second time come out with the legislation talking about introducing even if it's a national DC pension fund. So the norm across Africa is increasingly that there are national pension funds of some sort. And in South Africa, in our government, even if you look at the different departments, everybody seems to agree on one thing within government, that there should be a national pension fund of some sort. But is it going to be a national unclaimed benefits fund? Is it going to be a national DC pension fund to compete with the private sector? Isn't it going to be a social security arrangement on a pay-as-you-go, partially funded DB basis? That's part of the debate. And that's what we also, as ASSA, are trying to get involved with. So like I say, we've got this interest group where a number of us participate in it, and we try to get every opportunity we can to provide input to government departments. And so I've mentioned here some of the things we've done. We've written a few articles. You might remember the debate that we had last year at the convention. The ICA 2023 that Congress, which Andrea spoke about, she deliberately did not cover the presentation that we did. So we'll be sharing that presentation in this year's convention. But what we're building up to is I'm missing out on Lusani's public interest seminar. So we also had a couple of topics that we included there. But we're also now building up, and we're going to have a meeting again just after this to discuss this. We have a planned Indaba Day that we're trying to set up. So to have actuaries together, but also to have government representatives together to say, let's actually talk about where are we going with this. If we had to have started the system from scratch today, what would it look like? Given where we are, what should we be doing? Given the constraints on there's only so much tax shekels coming in, what can we do with the money? So this is something that we're trying to set up now, and we're trying to run with, so hopefully we'll be sharing good news with everybody soon, and I encourage everybody to participate. So we have a number of volunteers here. Itai sitting here in front has joined us recently, thank you very much, and anyone else who wants to get involved, just let us know. Anton's still running away. Anton's not crazy enough to get involved. All right, so what is the message in terms of Social Security and retirement reform? The thing that boggles my mind is when we speak to the youngsters, I was told this in 1996 when I started doing actuarial studies at the University of Cape Town. I was told there's no future in pensions for actuaries. All the funds are converting from DB to DC, therefore you should not go work in pensions. And so that was a very long time ago, and now I'm 46, and I've been working in pensions for more than 20 years, and the way things are going, I see myself very much employed for another couple of decades, assuming that I'm still alive on this earth. But the youngsters aren't coming in, even though this is a very exciting place to be working. So please preach that message to the youngsters whenever you get an opportunity. Tell them that pensions is a great place to be. It's not just for us old fogies. There's actually room for growth and exciting room for development for the young people also. And what we're going to be speaking about in our convention talk, which covers what we said at the ICA 2023, is that when we deal with government, we're trying to be very much seen as part of the solution, not part of the problem. So we in the past have sometimes erred on the side of we've got the solution, we're going to tell you what the solution is, you're going to listen to the solution, and that does not go down well with government. So we need to be prepared to listen and speak. And Andrea impressed me completely when she gave a Star Trek reference. So my Star Trek reference is that we have to remember that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And that's also going to come through in what we share in the convention. Okay, so we've had questions. So anything besides two pots that you want to ask or speak about here? Before I go to the general RMC wrap-up. We've still got half an hour, so we've got lots of time. Nothing online. Mensen's moeg. Nothing. Everybody's ready to go home.